Welcome to Until I Ascend, your guide for spiritual evolution. I'm your host, Goody, a perpetual work in progress, and an individual who understands that the spiritual journey happens one step at a time. Walk with me as I walk with you. Let's get going.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Until I Ascend. It's me, your host, Goody. I've been gone for a really, really long time, but I'm here with you today. And before we do anything else, I'm going to do a tarot pull just to see what kind of energy we have going on.
It's the card of the day. Today's card pull will be from the Melanated Tarot deck. This deck is the same as the original traditional Rider-Waite-Smith tarot deck. However, instead of being white, the people are black, and I love that about it. Today's pull is the Queen of Wands, the Ace of Pentacles reversed, and the Eight of Wands. Now, the thing about this is I do not read reverse cards. So if a reverse card shows up in a spread, it's supposed to be there. Should be fun. Let's see what we have going. First, I'm going to clarify the Queen of Wands to find out if it's energy or a person. This is an energetic pull. So the energy of the Queen of Wands is going to speak to where Until I Ascend has been in the most recent past. And in the most recent past, the Until I Ascend podcast has had Queen of Wands energy. That means the energy is creative, jump-started, and that makes sense for where we are today. The podcast has had the energy of being very creative, quick to start. Maybe there's a pause, and that's where we have been in the most recent past. This is the three-card tarot pull. The Ace of Pentacles reverse, which shocks me because I don't really have reversals in my decks, speak to the present situation or the present state of the Until I Ascend podcast. This is not a financial opportunity. It is a spiritual opportunity. And that's what this particular card is saying. Now, the last card is the Eight of Wands. That's indicating to me that once we get started, things are going to go really quickly. And that makes complete sense to me. Now, if I'm honest, I recorded this episode quite some time ago. The only reason you haven't had it is because I've been making it presentable for your listening enjoyment. That said, when I did the original tarot pull, we got the Tower. And the reason we got the Tower is there is a surprise in store. Buckle up, y'all. Let's get it.
Are you ready for a walk? Let's go for a walk.
And now for the surprise. Today we have Joel. Hey, Joel.
Hey. What's going on?
Is it Joel or Joel?
It's Joel.
Today we have Joel. Hey, Joel.
Hey, I got the introduction.
Hi to the people.
Twice. Hello, people. I get a double introduction. That means I'm special.
Double intro. So the way I figured it, I have so much going on in my real world that doesn't include a microphone. In order to make sure that I stay on task and actually bring you what I promised, I decided to bring someone on who has as interesting a path as I do. So we're with Joel. So what are we going to discuss today? Today we are discussing who qualified you. So if you know me well, you know that I was born into a spiritually gifted family. I was born to a woman who could see things, speak to, I guess, I would say dead people, but okay. She spoke to the ancestors. My father is a bit clairvoyant, definitely a dreamer. And all of their children, there are six of us, are blessed. So when it came to being qualified, you know I have all the qualifications to tell you about a spiritual path, but the best thing to do before you jump into anything spiritual is check your ego. So, you know, I have been charged to look at what are my qualifications for this. So this will be a discussion about my path and my voice and what makes my voice important. Joel, he's also a Bajan. Joel will start by telling us, tell us a bit about yourself, Joel.
Well, how do we start this? Well, as Glee said, I's a Bajan. Yes, I am a humble Brooklyn boy with a Bajan mother and a Grenadian father. So that means that I have survived wars that people do not understand. Overall, I was put on this earth to be inquisitive. I was put here to challenge everything, question everything, be curious about everything. And what brought me to this table is I used to fight life because I needed certainty. I needed to know what was going to happen. I needed to be right. And somewhere down the line of being broken down in so many pieces and then trying to put the pieces back together again, started to realize I'm not actually supposed to put these pieces together. I'm supposed to swap them out for a newer model. And that's what helped me develop the curiosity for spirituality and then wanting to figure out what is my place with all of this. Accepting that I do not have to have the answers, but I do have to make a decision about what makes sense for me so that I can continue down the road. And that's how I'm here.
That's interesting that you said that, because that makes me ask the question, is it necessary to be curious or have that curiosity in order to set out on a spiritual journey? I've always been curious as well, but with regard to knowing the future or needing to know what was going to happen, I've always had a good idea of what was going to happen because that's just one of my gifts. It's always been a gift. I ran from it for a really long time, but it was just always something. Knowing what was going to happen next, knowing what someone was going to say next was always just, it was my natural, that's my default. Sometimes to my demise, because, you know, I'll know what someone wants to say, but they'll say something different, and then they're like, you're not listening, but I know what they were going to say. But the thing about the curiosity is, I was born and, you know, raised in the Pentecostal church. At 13, my curiosity was more along the lines of, there has to be more than this. When I hear, you know, I was 13 and I was like, well, let's see what's hitting with the 5% nation. But I'm biracial, so a lot of the principles they stood on couldn't be applied to my life. So I just started to look at Islam, and that's such a beautiful religion. So, you know, I was going to convert, and then I started asking the questions that curious people ask. Well, it seems to me that the basic tenets of Islam are very similar to the basic tenets of Christianity. Let me look into Judaism. Let me look into Buddhism. Broken down to their very bare principles, their very bare tenets, all of these religions have the same thing in common. Love for yourself, love for your fellow man, seeking peace. You know, it's just how you get there. So it's interesting that you mentioned curiosity and how it led you here to this table, because that's definitely what led me here, just different types of curiosity. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Because I think Most of us are introduced to some sort of spirituality through our parents or family members, caregivers, our environment. But because of that introduction, rarely is it applauded that you then want to seek information for yourself. You're already put on a rigid path. And so in theory, for the most part, I believe that most people who start off in organized religion and then excel through towards it, you know, being priests or shamans or any kind of high ranking member, there has to be some component to it that was bigger than, well, I'm doing this because I was told. So I have to believe that curiosity is part of it, because there has to be some kind of, has to be some kind of exchange going on. This information is being given, but it's also got to be, it's got to be received in a way that this person desired to receive it. So that's why I always estimated to curiosity, because what would push you to go further than what you already have, if not for your own motivation to gain more? And that's what curiosity is really about. At the end of the day, curiosity just lets you choose a standpoint and then inquire about what else is there and how do I do it? What would I be willing to sacrifice before I go and figure out more of this information? So I always believe that at the end of the day, for people who ended up choosing their own direction, despite what was already given to them, those are people that you want to listen to. Those are people that you want to have conversations with, because they will always have a story. And you'll be surprised how connected their story could be to your own.
I'm kind of curious, though, because when I decided I was converting to Islam at 13, I came home, I told my parents, and they were like, okay. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I tried to get them to call me a different name, and they were like, yeah, that's not going to happen. But, you know, I was like, I don't eat pork anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, this, and they were like, oh, okay, fine, cool, fine, dandy. So on one hand, I'm not aware of what it's like to have pushback when you have a desire to grow spiritually. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, a lot of my spiritual growth has exceeded or gone outside of Christianity to the point whereby some people would try to call me a witch, which I don't consider myself to be a witch. I just consider myself to have a set of gifts that other people have, but they're not aware of. Mm-hmm. So what was that like for you as you knew there had to be more than just organized religion? What was it like? What was your pushback like?
Well, similar to you, I was tapping into something different in my youngest years, but nobody around me had the vernacular to express what it was. So then it was just treated as childish notions. I knew from an early age, I was seeing things out the corner of my eyes. I was hearing voices. I was feeling presences that were there, but not visible to the naked human eye. But as a kid, what do you have to express other than just outright saying what's going on? But of course, adults, they don't really, if it's not something that they can prove or see for themselves, they're not really gonna go with what you as a child are saying. That's not the way we grew up, essentially from that generation. So it kind of just got ignored. And then when I was in the church, I never cared about doing any of the things that I was doing as in the space of like, this is what I wanted for myself. I did it more because A, it was what my family wanted, especially my grandfather. And then B, it was a form of acceptance. It's like, oh, this is a circle that I get to be a part of. And I got to learn a lot of information. I got to learn a lot of workings of how organized religion is involved in so many aspects of our lives, and going to even things such as like church conventions and visiting other churches as an acolyte and participating in their sermons and practices. Like, that gave me a lot of insight as to what else, what is this all connected to and how much bigger it is. But once I started to feel like this is not working for me specifically because I saw way too much hypocrisy, not just from the church that I went to, but also to another church that my family started going to once we had moved from the location that we were in. I just didn't feel like this was speaking to me anymore. I felt like there was something off of it. And then when I was voicing those opinions, I was being treated like some kind of heretic for saying so. And then I realized that was sort of the same feeling I got when I was telling people about seeing and feeling things and nobody believed it. So the more I got this pushback of like, whatever I'm saying is coming off as nonsensical, and then being put in that position as a child was just like, you're not old enough and you don't have enough experience to be talking like this to adults. So watch, know your place. It just became apparent to me that like, all right, this is a battle I can't win from this perspective. So I'm just not gonna do it. I'm just not gonna work with it. And it's funny to say that, especially because I was too intelligent for my age. I knew too much information. I knew too much about the workings around me. And it didn't make sense that at a young age, I had that much information in my head. I can say I watched a lot of TV, I did. I read a lot, I did. And I was a quick learner, I definitely was. But it still didn't make sense as to why I knew what I knew. Similar to how you just said that like, you were able to know what it was like to talk to someone and then know what they were going to say before they said it. Even if they ended up changing their words, you kind of knew the theme that they were about to go to. It was the same, sort of the same for me. I was able to pick up on social cues, being able to predict people's movements and thoughts before it even came out of them. I was able to feel their feelings and then try to ask them a question about it. And it would always make me look creepy to other people because it was just like—
Right. I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you if you've ever been in a situation. As an example, I met my son's dad when I was 15. And we were friends. And we were all going, you know, we were just going to hang out as friends. And he was like, okay, I'm going to give you my number. And when he started giving me his number, I gave him his number. I was like, yeah, it's much more, you know, I said, oh, it's 718, you know, 111222. That clearly not the number, but he was like, did someone give you my number? And I was like, is that your real number? He was like, yes, that's my real number. And, you know, it for him, he just, you know, he calls me a witch to this day. But hilariously, he's Haitian. And I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. But things like that would always happen. That was semi-innocent. But there would be times I would be talking to people and think that I'm joking. And I would watch them get more and more uncomfortable because I was speaking their truth. And I didn't know I was speaking their truth. So what I did, I you know, while in my home, I wasn't restricted at all. But when I was outside of my home, I had, you know, I started getting to a point where I was like, say less. Granted, if you know me well enough, you know, I'm not good at saying less. But I started to become very guarded about the things that I would say. Because I didn't want to make people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I definitely wasn't telling people, you know, some people knew just because they shared the same kind of gifts. Some people knew because I was led to tell them things specifically, but by and large, people didn't know how I was, and that's just what it was. So have you ever had that occurrence where you're like, you're just speaking the people's truth and they're just so uncomfortable? And like you said, it gets creepy.
Yeah, I mean, for a good portion of my childhood, I could just read people in a way that they were truly uncomfortable with because they didn't even understand their own emotions. And then again, the problem is I don't know how I know what I know. I just know it.
They can call it claircognizance. That's knowing without knowing.
And see, that's the thing. If I had even a lick of that information when I was younger, it could have helped me express myself in a much better way. But because it was already coming from a place of detachment and depression, than whenever I felt that those means were like a way for me to connect with people. Like being able to read people the way that I was, I thought that was gonna make me closer to people. This just honestly made me more distant than anything else. Because then I just started getting the stigma. So just like, yo, he's mad weird, stay away from him, this, that, and the third.
Yeah, it's a very isolating. It's an isolating feeling, but you know.
It is. And I already had my own issues because of my health and my parents. So it's just like, that just doubled down on everything that made me feel more like a leper than anything else. But I think definitely where it really started to click that it was not going in a good direction for me was when I was a young adult between the ages of like 21 to like almost 29. Like, I was able to foresee things for people. I was able to predict, if nothing else, just like a small outcome that they would experience. And again, still didn't understand how I knew this information. I just assessed what they told me. And then whatever feeling it gave me, that's what I ran with when I tried to explain what it meant. But again, like, I was so used to rejection that in many ways I had to dumb it down so that it didn't sound like it was too on point. Although when certain people would tell me what the outcome would be overall, I was like, yeah, that's exactly what I was
talking about. Pretty much what I thought it would be.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's just like, I had to start going to this space of denial for myself because I just was tired of it putting me in a position of like feeling unworthy of acceptance because I keep actually scaring people more than having them embrace me. So what it really turned into for me was simply that it's supposed to be a gift. It's supposed to be something that's supposed to help me out in life, but really it just became a curse for a very long time. And I really couldn't put my finger on what about it was going wrong and if I was the cause of it going wrong. So it really took, again, starting off with that curiosity, it took curiosity again to try to give me a reason to pivot in a different direction and then figure out, am I using this gift right? Am I even as connected as I think that I am? And what more does this bring if I was to become more secure with it? And I think that's, you know, somewhere in my 30s where those questions started to line up again after I had basically just thrown everything to the side. That's when it started coming back to me and I realized that, like, no, I've always had something, but because I didn't have any knowledge of what it was, nor how to use it, nor was I put around people who could have given me even a fraction of information about what this is, I just felt like it was not useful to me. So therefore I didn't want to have that follow me everywhere I went. So I put it to the side. But when I picked it up again, I realized this is what I was always supposed to have. This is
purpose.
Part of me. My purpose, yes. And so that's one of the reasons why I say the curiosity is so important, because it's not just your motivation, it is like your guiding light. It's like whenever you're, anybody who knows this, whether they're spiritual or not, finding purpose is like being in a dark room with no lights on at all. You're just bumping into things all over the place, even though there's a voice telling you, no, you're doing the right thing. You're doing the right thing. But you have no idea what that means, because you have no idea how to get in touch with your senses. But curiosity will tell you, hey, no, stop. Wait a second, put your hands up. See if you can reach stuff. If you don't feel anything, take another step. Take another step until you touch something. Then when you touch it, feel what it feels like. And if it's a shape that you think is going to harm you, and move away from that. If you think it's a shape that can support you, grab onto it and move up a little bit more. And I feel like that is what spirituality ended up turning into for me. It was this very dark room and it had all these voices and things going on, but it was none of my senses were helping me figure out where I was. But then my curiosity, as I became more and more appreciative of it, it started becoming like a candle that started glimmering. Just a little dim light at first, but then the more I was invested in the curiosity, the bigger the flame got. And then all of a sudden I was able to see where I was going. I was able to start making my movements.
So it's interesting to me that you mentioned darkness, because, you know, as I even sit here and think about the question, like, the question is, how did you get on your spiritual path? I know it started for me, you know, I know I was always on it. And then at 13, I started walking, you know, kind of wandering away from what I was told to do. And then from 13 to 18, I was in like the darkest period of my life. And I didn't even care about converting or religion or spirituality. Like, it was really, really dark for me. Like, I didn't even want to do, you know, life anymore. I really want to, like, die. And I remember planning my exit from Earth, so to speak, and Jesus showing up, and I'm clairaudient. I'm all the clairs, really, but my strongest gift is clairaudience. And I heard, you know, this isn't it, you know. I just heard the reassurance of Jesus that things were going to be better. And I followed that. And then by 18, you know, I had like this really big event. It wouldn't be big to others, but you know, it was big to me. Basically, y'all, I was in the church. I don't know what happened, but I might have ran around the church and been like every comedic church dance, church lady situation. And I knew that that wasn't something I would do as a person. It's just not my style. In any event, after that, I went into the church heavy. And around 23, Jesus came and was like, yo, you're going to grow more outside of the church. So it's time for you to leave that alone. So, you know, I left it alone, and I did indeed grow more outside of the church, which brings me to the question, how do you feel about religion versus spirituality?
Religion feels like school, where spirituality feels like a journey. So to express that, okay, you know what? Let me put it like this. Religion feels like when people tell you to go to college, and spirituality feels like when, what it's like when you say, no, I'm not gonna do college, and you just find a lifestyle that speaks more to you, a job that speaks more to you, and then all of a sudden you're more successful in some ways than the people who went through school.
So for me, I tell people, every spiritual path should have religious practices, and every religion should be rooted in spirit. So I believe that they're one and the same. As it relates to, I think the problem we're having now, spiritually and religiously, is that I think the church is a stepping stone, but people don't know it. Like, people build houses within the church instead of being the house that is the church.
Exactly.
And because that's the case, you have a bunch of people who will tell you a plethora of things because the Bible said so. Mm-hmm. And hilariously, the Bible won't even be saying what these people are saying it says. And it doesn't align well with what Christ would have wanted. And it stunts their growth.
Exactly. Especially because people take all religious doctrines out of context to fit a narrative that speaks to them in their modern moment. Yet forgetting that those same scriptures were made for a time where we did not have any of the technological advancements, cultural advancements, or educational advancements that we do today.
I often tell people, you know, I write in my journal because one day my journal is going to be the Bible. Or part of the Bible. I'm going to be a book in the Bible. You know, 2021 post-COVID or, you know, whatever it is. Because that's what it is. Like, when we're reading the Bible, we're just reading the journals of these dudes and the stories that passed down from generation to generation. You know,
exactly.
So You know, I think the world's getting it wrong when we stop at the church and the organized religion, because there's also part of spirituality is an entire journey, like you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
Religion is a step on that journey.
Exactly. But religion has marketed itself as the pinnacle of the journey.
And because it's financially beneficial.
It's financially beneficial, but it also goes back into the art of humanity, which is tribalism and creating hierarchies within that tribalism. So we know for religion in any aspect of it, outside of the monetization, that they are in a hierarchy where one person or a group of people get to be the elite over others. And we know usually at the very bottom are the parishioners, the people who accept the practices they want to feel like they are connected to something. Yet those above very much have the ability to take advantage of these same people and tend to do so. Therefore, it puts out this image that if you are not like us, you are doing something wrong in life. And yet, here they are taking advantage of people, clearly doing something wrong in life. Yet there will be no, or at least as far as we can tell, no consequences for this action. It's actually applauded. It's actually believed to be something that should be done because it's the only way for the lower people to ascend. It's the only way for them to understand what they're truly here for. Whereas with spirituality, because it's so open, so broad, and filled with so many components, not only is it, in my opinion, impossible to fully command spirituality, but it makes it more possible for anyone to just be like, well, this is bullshit, and be able to express why, not having all the information, not knowing all the facts, but just being in tune with the energy around them, just being in tune with what they feel, and then being able to express how that works not through the idealism, but through the just outright reality of what we're sitting with. Because, you know, coming from where I did in the church, I don't really want to hear about a pastor telling you to like make sacrifices, but he got a Benz outside. That's not really helping the story.
I mean, he's making sacrifices too. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's making great sacrifices, but his sacrifices haven't caught up to him as of yet.
Exactly. And I think that sometimes that becomes a bigger issue, that with religion, especially, you know, let's just take Christianity, for instance. Literally from the gate, it's telling you, if you don't follow these scriptures, you're going to burn in hell. So you use fear as a component to get people in a submissive state. Where would that go other than either it works sometimes or it makes people spiteful other times? Like, instead of giving this idea that like an all-powerful, all-knowing being which created everything, that has an influence of creating everything that we know and are a part of, would just like you to acknowledge them, love them, and follow their lead, where would have been the harm in just stating it that way? Why did it need to, from the very beginning, be like, you know what?
Because the fear is monetized. They monetize the fear.
Exactly. They monetize the fear. And we remember, too, like from the early foundations of the church, they were the intelligent ones. They were the ones that had education. They were the ones that had information. So therefore, they were speaking to a vastly, almost stupid, but uneducated public. They didn't know anything past what was given to them. They didn't have any resources to chase any of the information. They had to accept what was being given to them. Like when you think of something like a town crier, the town crier just basically spit out exactly what the church told them to say, but yet they were a bit more educated than the same people that they were speaking to. So it, again, enforced a hierarchy where someone who is of use can now speak to everyone else, knowing that this is as best as it's going to get for them. They're never going to get any further information. And this person now also feels essential because now the church has chosen them to speak through them, speak for them, excuse me. And again, where we are in life right now, could you imagine, as educated as we are, as much technology is on our side right now, and as much awareness of what else exists in the world besides just what we know, that we're still somewhat in a space where just a collection of people get to tell you what's going on, and you're supposed to accept it, while another subsection of this group is quite powerful, controls everything that goes on within this organization, and is not interested in what people don't like about it, because they're still going to do what they're meant to do.
So, everything you say, facts, Bible, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, everything you're saying is on point. I've had the experience, like, I have a prayer group, or, you know, a group of women who pray with me. Mm-hmm. They used to be more, and we used to always pray together. And some were very rigid in their religious practices. Mm. And I'm me. I grew up in the church, definitely went to Bible study, but I didn't commit everything to memory. I think though I was really young when I told myself, I'm here for the ministry of music. Kind of like Marshawn Lynch, like, you know why I'm here, it's for the ministry of music. In any event, what would happen is I would just speak from my heart and from what I was led to. And they would be speaking from, you know, the Bible, their path. And we would end up in the same place. And so in order, you know, I think I had a fear of not being fully accepted when I came out and said, hey, you know, I'm taking a deep dive into, like, African traditional religions, and, you know, I'm more for power than anything else. You know, I learned this as a 5%er, I self Lord and Master. You know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, and I'd be like, well, Jesus kind of told us the only difference between himself and us was that he knew what he was trying to teach us. Because he was like, you could do everything I could do. All you have to do is do it. We'd end up in the same location. And I think after a while, that just built a trust in whatever my path was. You know, I'm sure they didn't understand it. Like, you know, be like, what do you mean the moon? You know, what do you mean the moon? And I don't really deal with stones like that, or I don't deal with cards. And I'd be like, okay, because it's not my job to push what I do on you. I could show you better than I could tell you. And I'm definitely not here to force you, because the path I'm on, it might just be for me. It might not be for you. But, you know, God is funny in the way that he put us all in, you know, different paths end up in the same direction. Some people, you know, my path sometimes includes me stopping to talk to others. My path sometimes includes me stopping to smell flowers. You know, I'm not rushing to the end goal. Some people might want to read the Bible and be like, nah, God said to wait for him here and he'll be there, so I'm just going to speed up. But we're all going to end up in the same direction, the same location. You know, the goal is ascension. That's my goal. That's what I'm always trying to be, higher, higher, and higher. Mm-hmm. All the time. That's the title of the podcast, Until I Ascend. So, you know, I just think it's interesting how people get so rooted in religion that they kind of forget their spirit. They're scared of their spirit, even. A lot of people are scared of their spirit. A lot of people have gifts and they ask God to take them away. I never did that. Instead, what I did was I busied myself to the point whereby I didn't have time to focus on my gift. So I didn't have to focus on my gift. But hilariously, the darkness you spoke about, you remember you spoke about how dark, you know, your spiritual journey started in darkness. My spiritual journey requires a lot of darkness. Like, the stillness in the dark helps me so much. I do something, well, I don't do it, I end up in it. If I'm doing too much and I'm helping too many people and my energy's tapped out, I end up in what I call the cocoon stage. Mm-hmm. We're in the valley so deep that, you know, the only way I can pray is help. But like, really, sometimes it, you know, I'm so tapped out energetically, mm-hmm. that the only thing I have for God, or rather my God squad, because if I listed the people I pray to, it'd be crazy. All I could say is, look, I need help. I don't have anything else to say, just help. And sometimes I have to be buried in order to grow bigger.
I definitely understand that. And so, I think having that outlook speaks to the variety of ways that, like, we're going to interpret spirituality and then what it's offering us at the same time. It's just like you said, there are people out there who have gifts and then they ask God to give it, to take it away from them because they don't understand the gifts. And they might have been put in positions to become knowledgeable, but they weren't aware that that's what it was. And I like to look at portions of spirituality as when you're talking to someone who speaks a different language. Like, you know, something simple. As here as Americans, if someone can't speak English, what we do? We start talking slow as if that's going to help.
Yeah, as if they're going to understand it.
And that doesn't do anything but make us look stupid because we're the ones talking slow, not the other person. Totally negating the fact that this person is clearly fluent in their own language and taking on another one at the same time. They might be highly intelligent in their language, while half the time the people who are complaining the most about someone not speaking English barely can prove they got that 12th grade level of vocabulary. And overall, that we're dismissing the components of this person and who they're like, who they are as a whole person, simply because we cannot interact with them in this specific way. And I realized that, what if that's one of the functions about spirituality that really has hurt a lot of people down the road? What if you've been able to hear or receive information, but because you don't have the components to translate it, it just makes you feel like you're losing yourself? You know what I'm saying? Like, I one time I really thought about it. I was like, what if schizophrenia is a component of multiple people's spirit across the board being harnessed in this one person? And that's why this person is unable to control what's going on. Because it's some sort of anomaly.
Some argue that schizophrenia is kind of like, schizophrenia might need an exorcism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you exactly. know. Because... You know, schizophrenics don't just have, like, all of these personalities. The voices are rarely ever saying, yo, go sit down and chill. The voices are always saying, like, my aunt's a paranoid schizophrenic. The voices are always saying some of the illest shit on the planet. Like, the voices going, kill, kill, kill. Like, yo, I'm going to lean on the side of, that needs a lot of prayer and medication. I'm never going to discount the need for medication.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people say that schizophrenia is a bit of a possession.
No, and I can understand that. But then that's all the more reason why, I've heard that as a psychology student, I was already, when I was reading the DSM-4 at the time, I read how they describe schizophrenia, and then I was trying to decide for myself, but is that the only way it could be? You mean to tell me, through the logistics of science, this is the only thing that we're able to predict and then describe it as? And I'm like, but there could be possibilities that there's something else higher than what we in our current state of awareness can attach it to as far as what a description should be. And that is the kind of what, that's the kind of reason why it's just, I've accepted that spirituality leads, has so many paths, that it leads to so many directions, because what we decided as a society to count as what exists and doesn't exist still speaks to that same hierarchy that I was speaking to about in religion, where it's just a series of people just decided for everybody else, this is what it is. Yet, because we lack the tools to measure information in any other way than what we have built so far, we're not giving credence to the fact that there could be so much more at play than what we are aware of, simply because we can't measure it that way. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
I get it.
Yeah, like, especially when we're talking about religion and the acts of God. Since no one can fully prove that God exists, it's always just based within our faith. I don't have a problem with that. But then the fact that people will argue you down to the teeth about what's real and what's not, when they too cannot prove that God exists, it always creates this dynamic of like, well, it's just going to become my truth is stronger than your truth, and then that's the end of the story.
I mean, for me personally, I know God exists because I exist as God.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, a lot of people are uncomfortable with that reality, but it is what it is. Get comfortable being uncomfortable around me.
Exactly.
And, you know, I from every religion that I have done a deep dive into, you know, I take things away from me. I mean, from it. And the 5% nation, you know, while they would consider me an earth, I respond to speak on it, God.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, I'm speaking on it now. So, you know, we done got real heavy. Let's do something fun. You want to tell me your funniest story of, like, knowing without knowing?
Funniest story of knowing without knowing. Okay. I think I got one here. I think this is back when I was real, real young. When I was a kid, there was this dude that lived across the street from me. And like, I was born in Bed-Stuy. So when I was living out here, it was the apex of the crack era. It was crazy, shootouts every day, the whole nine yards. Everything you ever heard in a Biggie lyric, that was it out here. But around the time that I was like six, I was riding my bike, got grazed in the head by a bullet. And then a couple of days later, then our windows got shot up. And then my parents was like, nah, we good, we're getting out of here. Flatbush. And in Flatbush, it was funny because I was, even though Bed-Stuy was such a crazy area at the time, it still had the leading schools in the district. So I was reading and writing on sixth grade level, even though I was in the third grade. But when we went out to Flatbush, nah, they wasn't popping like that at all. And so here I come into schools and I'm trying to be like, you know, be part of the conversation, we do whatever the teacher's saying, but apparently I'm too smart for my own good, so that just put a target on my back. And then when I'm trying to make friends, it was the same thing. It's just like, they just felt like I was too smart for my own good. So then, you know, they keep me around, but then I usually be like the punching bag of everybody's jokes. So I remember one of them, he was a very popular kid, and he was biracial. So it was always interesting because he was the only biracial kid on the whole block. So for some reason, I feel like that made him want to prove himself all the time, especially because his pops was like a karate instructor. So he was always trying to just like puff his chest out, be bigger than what he really is. But it was his only way to be noticed, because I felt like because of the dynamics of his mother and father, he always felt like he was in the background no matter what he did. But there came a time where it was just like, I got a chance to go places with him and his dad and do stuff with them. And then I was just like, I don't know why, because I was too young to understand what the hell I was talking about. But I was just like, there was a point where I asked, I was like, are you sure this is dad? He was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I see the resemblance, but I don't know. Is that really your dad? He was like, well, is your mom your mom? Because she's light-skinned. And I was just like, well, yeah, because I've seen the family pictures. He's like, you don't know. And then it's funny because he was very upset with me about that. And I feel like that was the beginning of like our descent, where we started not being as cool as we used to be. And many, many, many years later, right before he had passed away, like, he was going through a real huge depressive bout, and he had a fight with his father. It was one of the reasons he ended up moving away from New York. In that fight, he had found out that his father was not his father. His father was actually his, well, the person as his father was actually his uncle.
Okay.
So basically, he was in the same family, but basically...
Yeah, so they had a resemblance, but they had a resemblance. Why would you even know that that
exactly.
was...
Exactly. So, like, his person as his father, his brother actually was the one who kind of had, like, something with my friend's mother first, and then she just, like, quickly just let that go, and then she fell for...
The brother.
And so then,
how did you find this out? Like,
this
you
is
know.
Actually weird, because I found all this out after my friend's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like the truth had finally come out about like who his father was. He's very upset with his mother and very upset with his father. He's just like, y'all didn't even give me a chance to figure this out. Like, y'all didn't tell me from the beginning, this and the third. And his actual father, I'm not exactly sure what happened to him, but he just like disappeared from the situation very early on. That's why he wasn't there by the time he was born in the first place. But it was just like that intuition of mine, I still to that day just didn't understand how I knew. And what made it funny too is just that like his mother pulled me to the side one day. She was like, no, Jerry one day tell me that you ask him if that's his mother. And he was questioning me so much about that for all the years, because it was like he finally had a bug in his ear and to tell him something. And I didn't know where he get it from until he had mentioned it one day that you asked him. And I was just like, sorry, I wasn't trying to like start any problems with that or anything. And she was like, no, actually, although I didn't handle it the best way, I'm really, really grateful that you did that. And I was like, well, why? She was like, because I had to learn how to take responsibility for myself right then and there. I had to learn to stop being ashamed. And it like, I didn't expect that. I wasn't aware of like how it could turn into something like that or in all that way. And as serious as the story sounds, the reason I say it turned out fun later on is because of course you watch a mother who lost a son just like, she's not going to be in the happiest state of mind, clearly.
But it was just laughing.
Like, she was like, yeah, she was able to accept everything. And on top of that, like, she was just like, she felt like she was growing as a person because she finally was releasing all these burdens and everything like that. And it's just like, from her, like, I watched the whole family dynamic change because it was like, she was having a hard time with her mother, with her sister, like my friend's cousins and stuff like that, like all this for a long time because they just kept jam-packing all these family secrets and never talking about it, which you know, Caribbean people.
Yeah.
But it's just like this level of openness that during the next couple of years as we did like a memorial for him and everything like that, like she was more jovial every single time that I got to see her. She was cracking jokes. She would start telling funny stories about him when it was all said and done and everything like that. And it was just like, that's when I started to feel like one of those moments when I started to feel like something that I was ashamed of at first actually had merit. And it was something to take away from it when it was all said and done. And so I was just like, although I don't have too many like ha-ha moments of like, you know, this coming to a head, other than like a couple of times when I told people some real weirdo shit was about to happen to them. They didn't believe me. That weirdo shit came true in a heartbeat. I like that one always stands out to me because it was like the first concept I saw of like full-on adult maturity that also embraced joy at the same time.
Okay, dope story. My story, I think is funny. So I was set up to go meet a producer, you know, because I was an MC. So I'm set up to go meet a producer. His studio was around Penn Station. So, you know, I take train Penn Station. And I'm walking to touch the door to go into the studio, I hear, because I'm clairaudient, "Oh my God, he's gonna ask you to marry him." So, you know, I go in, I listen to beats, I pick a beat, I write to the song, it's getting late, and dude is like, "Okay, I'm gonna walk you to the train station." And I'm like, "Okay, cool." And, you know, we're walking and joking, talking about the track, da 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 da. And then he says to me, "I know you know." And I'm like, "Know what?" He's like, "You gonna make me say it, aren't you?" And I'm like, in the back of my mind, I remember the voice. The voice didn't sound like, "Aw, he's gonna ask you." It was like, "Oh my God." It was a panicked voice. It wasn't like, "Oh, this is the next best step for you." So I had to, like, I didn't know what he was talking about. I was like, "I don't know what you're talking about, dog." So finally he goes, "You know, I gotta ask you to marry me." Mm-hmm. And I was like, even though, like, he was right, I knew what he was going to say. It was one of those moments where I just feigned all the ignorance, got home, and that was that. So but can you imagine? Penn Station, this is the first time I'm meeting dude, and he talking about, "Will you marry me?" Talking about, "You know, I know you know." "I don't know nothing." "I don't know nothing, and ain't nothing happened." Shout out to Lord Finesse. But yeah, you know, then there are the instances where, like, I like to cover and protect my energy to the point whereby, because what happens spiritually when you are ascending is the equivalent to a forest fire, if you will. Mm-hmm. People see this flame just pop up in the sky, and the spirits that need it come to it. But every spirit that come to it, you know, some people will leech off of you. Mm-hmm. Some people will just be super needy, even though their intention is not to be leeched or leeches. So I've learned to cover my energy. You know, that's why, you know, people are like, "Oh, I'm an empath and it's so hard and I feel everything." You don't have to feel everything. You only have to feel what you're supposed to feel. So when I pray, I tell God, you know, to cover my energy and only send people to me who need me and me alone. So I could even use you as an example of that. Like, you know, on social media, walking the street, wherever I am, the mission is the same. I'm not stopping unless God tells me to stop and engage. I don't engage in foolishness. You know, sometimes only if I respect people speaking. But you ask the question. What was the question you asked? About what if you picked your destiny? What if everything you encounter, you selected, right? Mm-hmm. I stopped because I was supposed to stop. Usually I just scroll right by. I don't care who it is. Scroll right by. And that leads us here. But sometimes I'll tell God, "Look, God, it's too much. I can't help anyone right now. I have to help myself." And one day, you know, I was done being selfish And I said to God, okay, God, because I pray in my shower. I have a shower ritual. And I was like, okay, God, you know, I'm ready to help whoever you think needs me. So I'm walking to the train station and I'm like late as everything. So I might miss the train. So I'm walking, zoop, zoop, zoop. I'm walking. And there's a girl behind me. She's walking too. She says something. And I look back like, you know, you good? And as we're walking, she's like, nah, I'm not good. My ex keeps calling me and he's stalking me. And I was like, oh, okay. So he called as we were speaking and I said, give me the phone. So she gives me the phone and I say, hello. And he's like, stop playing with me. And I was like, you've got the wrong number. Cause I'm like, okay, it's wrong voice. You know, he'll stop playing. He was like, stop playing with me. He described what she was wearing. I hung up. I looked at her and I said, look, if you don't handle this situation right now, this man's going to kill you. And she's like, well, what do you mean? So I took her all in and she was a nurse. Mm-hmm. And I was like, do you pray for yourself as much as you pray for your patients? And she was like, no. You know, I pray for my patients because they need the prayer. She was a nurse in a cancer facility. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, you need to start praying for yourself. Well, bigger than that, when you get to work, wherever you're going right now, she was going to work. When you get there, I need you to go to the sink and I need you to start praying for yourself. And I need you to wash your hands. And as you are washing your hands, I need you to tell God, the same way I'm washing my hands, I want to wash my hands of this situation. I want to wash him away. And when I showed her exactly how she should move her hands and exactly what she should do to be done with the situation. She was like, oh, okay. And you know, I'm telling her something that would be considered root work, right? Yeah. She had a big Christian scarf on. Jesus, 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 right? Usually if it's Jesus, 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 what I'm telling you don't make sense. I don't know why she trusted me, but the next time she saw me, she came up to me. She was like, oh my gosh, it worked. He just stopped calling me. He stopped. Now, prior to that, before she met me, like the day before, she said that she was doing laundry and he came to the laundromat with a gun. You follow what I'm saying? So that's how, you know, when you talk about, well, this whole discussion is really about who qualifies you. As we wrap it up, because I'm going to want to hear a story like that from you. I don't walk into this thinking that I know everything. I walk into this thinking that I know nothing, and that's why the curiosity is key, because I always want to learn more. So I don't know everything. I'm consistently checking my ego to make sure it doesn't get too big. Because when you do help people and when you can guide people, they start to try to treat you like the pastor of a church.
Yeah.
And I don't want that for myself, because my goal is to show people their own power, not to have them look at mine.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I have an engagement, such as this young lady who dude was definitely going to kill her if she didn't take matters into her own hands. Every time I have an engagement such as that, I consider that a qualification. Mm-hmm. So who qualifies me? My acts of service, my faith in something bigger, and my understanding that although I see myself as God, as because I am formed in his image, I understand that there's a higher power, and I'm just learning to, like, I think the true ascension is me learning my full power, and that once I get there, it's bye to this dusty ghetto planet Earth. So, tell me your story. Tell me if you think that's what qualifies you. Tell me if you even think you're qualified.
I will put it like this. On a daily basis, I've questioned if I'm qualified and what exactly is it that I'm qualified for. But throughout the many experiences in my life, so many that most of the time I forget them until my subconscious randomly makes me remember them out of nowhere, I recognize that I was put in many positions to relay messages that I did not know of prior, that I wasn't prepared to say to anyone, and I didn't understand where this information came from. But it just seemed that as I spoke to whomever I spoke to in those moments, I had the right thing to say at the right time, exactly when they were going to be most receptive to it. And to have that kind of consistency in your life, without context, it makes no sense. But when you're finally able to take a step back and look at the bigger picture, you start to see how the dots connect to each other and it all makes sense. But I think the most profound version of that was my marriage, my relationship to my ex. There's many times when I was trying to figure out, like, how did this even happen? Because even as a meeting was pure happenstance. I wasn't even living in New York at the time. But I had to move back up because I had to have a surgery. I was losing my life and I didn't even know. So I had to have this major surgery to cut out a lot of parts of my body that were in dire position. So my recovery was almost a year, but 2 months into my recovery, I meet my ex just because I'm home at the time. And my godmother just all of a sudden had this brilliant idea, like, I have somebody that I think you need to talk to. I think both of y'all gonna get along. And from there, it was just like, it was almost like a whirlwind romance, like the kind of stuff you would see on TV, stuff I never thought would ever exist for me. But it took me literally 4 years to find out who she really was. And then that's when it became obvious what my purpose was in all of this to begin with. She was someone who needed help with where she was in this country, where she was in her life. And although I had in no way had any expertise on anything, what I had was an abundance of awareness and an ability to listen to the information being given to me and then relay a message from a space that, although I didn't know where it came from, it seemed to be the right thing to say and it seemed to be the right thing to do. Like, sort of like how you stated earlier that you was coming up and you were going to the studio and then you just had this feeling that, like, oh, he's gonna propose to you.
Oh, it was definitely, it wasn't a feeling, it was a...
I mean, it was a message that you were being told that, like, he's gonna propose to you. Like, for a whole year, prior to when she told me exactly what she needed to tell me, there was a message that I kept receiving. It was like, she's in danger. And I kept asking her questions every single day, like, what is going on? What are you not telling me? What's happening? And the message would still remain the same. It wouldn't give me any extra insight. It would just keep telling me she's in danger. And I had to ask the question in every way possible. I used to just use freaking Google Translate to just ask the question in a different language, just because I was like, this is how adamant I am on getting the answer out of this damn question. But really, really at the end of the day, what it was that she was not a citizen. And she was having problems with immigration, and it was getting close to a time, especially because this is during the Obama years, where citizenship and illegal immigrants were like that kind of conversation was at an all-time high. And so, like, the
deportation
was at an all-time high. And she was getting very close to being visible and on that board. And when she finally told me, then it finally clicked, like, this is the danger that the message is telling me about. And then the question is, like, what can I do in this position? I've never had to be in this position before. How do you deal with this kind of scenario and anything like that? And the first thing that came to my mind is just like, I don't know how to protect you, but I do love you, so we're going to get married. Because at the very least, I know that that's a surefire way of being able to protect you within this space to the best of my abilities. And figure out what the next step is for your life. Let's end the cycle right here, right now. And for the duration of our relationship after that, although it went in many spaces, that voice kept getting smaller and smaller about protecting her. And then it became louder and louder about letting her find her way. She was very committed to the idea that we really were going to be husband and wife from here on out, despite the fact that I knew from the very beginning, I said, we're not actually going to be a married couple until we take care of our problems, because we had so much going on. And she was just never in a headspace to talk about it or deal with it. To a degree, I understand that better now from where I'm at, because in hindsight, when you are so stressed out and you have so many people relying on you the way that she did, she could barely think of herself 9 times out of 10. That's how she got worse in the situation that she was a part of. And me being by her side helped put more spotlight on her and what she needed to have for herself, what she deserved, to take ownership of what she earned in life and stop being so modest about like what she can't have. Because I was like, not only do you have the skill set, you are in a space to do more than what you have, because this is not just about you and your family. Like, you're creating a lane that other people will end up following down the road. That's what this voice is telling me, but you're avoiding it because you're too scared of confrontation, of dealing with harsh, ugly truths. And all I could do was just keep repeating the messages that I was receiving. But when the pushback was too heavy, I had to just learn and just let it go. You know what I'm saying? And also in reverse, to be quite honest with myself, the same kind of information I was giving her, I realized in the end I needed to do the exact same thing for myself. Because once I parted ways, I realized that the voice was not just speaking for one, it was actually speaking for two.
Yep.
I thought it was about her. And then I realized, no, what I was being given was an opportunity to do something, to be part of the impossible, and then accept that it was impossible to begin with. Putting two broken people together, because both of us have been through some stuff in life, and you cannot make a whole person out of two broken people. But if someone is willing, you can mend some of those pieces to a larger space, so that the process of
healing and dealing.
Exactly. So that process was somewhere to begin with all of that. And to this day, I'm glad that I was able to be a part of that. But I also realized that in many ways, it was mine as well. It was the very beginning of me choosing myself in a lifetime where I never did that before.
Okay.
And so that's why I've recognized over time that, like, as modest as I can be, as many times as people have told me, like, oh my God, I'm so glad I got to meet you, I'm so glad I could talk to you. It's just like, yo, you just knew exactly what to say and knew exactly how to break it down to me and everything. And a lot of times I'm just like, I appreciate what you're saying and thank you, but it's just like, I don't know what I did. I just did what came natural to me, and that's the best that I could do with that. In the end, I now finally have come to terms with the fact that, like, this is something bigger than me, speaking through me, utilizing me, and giving me the opportunity to help people see through their darkness, just the same way that I was somehow able to start seeing through mine. And again, just like you said, I don't like being put on that pedestal. And for the first time in my life now, I'm outright refuting it. Whereas before, I was just being mute about it because I didn't want to disappoint anybody. But what I realized in the end is simply that it's not about what people think I am able to do for them. It's what these opportunities are going to create for all of us going forward. I have a part in that. There's no need to be ashamed, confused, or disappointed in what it all means, because actually all of that is par for the course in the first place. So I just got to be there.
I have a question. Because I know when things intensified for me.
Mm-hmm.
What was 2017 like for you? Did you see an increase in the intensity of your desire to ask more questions and learn more and grow more?
Cool. Yes, because 2017 was a year of revelations for me. How do I put this?
While you figure it out. You got it?
Yeah. Let me just put it like this to make it as simple as possible. 2017 was a multi-layered process of opening myself up to possibilities. I was very close-minded and I didn't realize that beforehand. They say when you get older, you start to become more conservative. I realized I was very conservative from the very get-go. And now I understand that like growing up in the church is what helped that. 2017 was like the very beginning of a time where I was becoming more and more liberal because the experiences that I was having were putting me in spaces that I could have never foreseen for myself. And it wasn't just for a spiritual journey, it was for a sexual journey, it was for an identity journey, it was for an educational journey. It was just like, it was putting me in spaces where I thought I was outright being denied before. And then it was showing me that like, well, see, if you hadn't done A, B, and C in the past, you wouldn't be here right now. So are you sure you still want to keep telling yourself what you can't do when you rather should be talking about what you can right now? And again, I still wasn't able to fully understand what these messages were, but they increased at such a velocity.
Rapid rate.
Yeah, that like I couldn't ignore it. I just couldn't put, you know, those feelings to the side anymore. I had to pay attention. And it was like a lot. Like it was, this is where I credit my writing to. That was when I started to realize I have something to say and it needs to be put out now. Like I can't sit here and wait. I can't sit on it. I can't hide it. I can't keep it to myself. I have to say these things to people. And then that's when like, that's the beginning of nurturing where I am right now. But without that year specifically, I don't know exactly how I would feel about where I'm at in my life right now, because the clarity that I gained from that time, it really like, all those experiences, especially the people that I was able to help during the time that I doubt I was ever going to meet under any other circumstances, like it really changed things around. Like I was dealing with like massive depression, people dealing with loss of death in their life, people who were the cause of death, and still being able to share these messages that just put them in a different mind state altogether.
Okay, so for me, 2017 was, I want to say I started 2017 with 3 tarot decks. Mm. And there was this intensity. Taking it a step back, the reason why I read tarot in the first place is by the time I was 24, I would pray, go into a Barnes & Noble, and tell God to lead me to what I needed to read.
Mm-hmm.
It would always be something. And one day it was a tarot deck. And it took me a really long time to understand what the deck was, but the deck was so that I could kind of train myself and train my gift.
Yeah.
So 2017 comes and I have to lean on the same thing I leaned on when I was 24. But now it was not only do you need more tarot decks, like I needed them. I felt like I was crazy. I needed tarot decks. I needed crystals. I needed sage. I needed frankincense and myrrh. Like I needed incense. I needed oils. Like I just needed, like I could not have these things. I tried and it would be like, you have to grow now. And then it was on top of, you have to grow now. Remember, I'm clairaudient. It was, you have to take a look at African traditional religions and the people that are doing them. You're mm-hmm. going to learn something because the message was, you're a Christian, but you're more than a Christian. I was like, oh, okay. And I was intended to take a look at what was going on in these spiritual spaces. I say spiritual because, again, these were people who were breaking from religion, not because they were curious about what else was out there, but because they were hurt by what was in the church and what the church had done to them. and the way the church wasn't allowing them to be free.
Mm-hmm.
So in some spaces, you know, you say you're a Christian and everybody is ready to come for your neck, but I'm a Christian and I don't care about anyone coming to my neck, for my neck, because I'm protected. So in 2017, I had to get more tarot decks. I had to grow more spiritually. I had to study African traditional religions. And I had to be public with what I was doing. That's the thing right there. The publicizing it, telling people what I was doing. Because my mom was called a witch, her children are called witches, and I didn't want to be called a witch. And I, you know, I was tired of being a weirdo, but I had gotten used to being weird. I just didn't want to give anybody any reason to quantify how weird I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I also, you know, I had been chanting since 2015, maybe. So it was like, oh, you got to tell everybody. Ultimately, I believe the message was, what I was supposed to learn was I was supposed to grow more, because at the time I didn't know it, but 2020 was coming and people weren't going to be able to go to their churches anymore. And people weren't going to be able to lean on what they were leaning on before. But because I was coming out and publicly saying, this is my path. Yes, I'm a Christian, but I'm not relegated to just being a Christian. I'm a daughter of the water. You know, I'm called to Ifa, and I would be a daughter of Yemaya, but I don't believe that I'm supposed to be fully indoctrinated into any one religion, because that would do a disservice, at least for right now, that would do a disservice to the path I'm on, because the path I'm on is supposed to show people that they can believe in God, they can believe in Jesus, and they can still believe in what, you know, your path is your path, your power is your power.
Mm-hmm.
And there are ways to do that and still glow. There are ways to do that and not be the devil. And I think ultimately I was supposed to be this regular schmegula girl from the Bronx who wasn't like, you know, maybe some would be like, oh, she got some bad dude with her, but definitely not the kind of person where you'd be like, oh, here she come with the church. You follow what I'm saying? Like, just someone that people could relate to and understand. And if you could relate and understand, then I'm going to spark your curiosity so that you could get on your spiritual journey. And then a part of my path is helping people find their power. Without, you know, without being egocentric. That's what this is. So,
I like that.
This is who I am. Who qualified me? I'm qualified every time God allows me to be a light on the path to Him.
Mm-hmm.
So I am qualified. Not big-headed about it.
Nah.
I'm here. I'm here for folk. But only the folk that need just me. If it's not just me, you know, God got whoever's for you in queue. But I am definitely here. Are you qualified, Joel?
I am qualified.
Amen. That's all right. Sure. That's it, folks. Thanks for bearing with us on episode, I don't know, maybe two of Until I Ascend. This has been great. We will be back. Yes, Joel is coming back next week. It's been a blast. Thank you. Bye.
Take it easy.
Well, before we go, Joel, where can they find you?
I am at Black Man Nobody on Instagram, at Rising Demise on Twitter, and Joel Phillip on Facebook.
Hi. Okay, y'all. Light up.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Until I Ascend podcast. I can be found on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're looking for me on social media, you'll find me on Instagram at Until I Ascend, and you will be able to email me at untilisend@gmail.com. I've had a great time with you. See you next week. Bye.